Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 16, Number 9. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was PSN number 37, functional foods. Both real and pseudo-functional foods continue to develop and expand. A functional food is any healthy or functional food that claims to have a health-promoting or disease-preventing property beyond the basic function of supplying nutrients. The general category of functional food includes processed food or foods fortified with health-promoting additives like vitamin-enriched products or fermented foods with live cultures. Now, just to be clear, CHI does not advocate the use of any processed, dead, sterile, refined food that's been reinforced with a vitamin or a mineral or a phytonutrient, such as white flour, for example, or most commercial fast foods. Breakfast cereals are the worst, best example I can think of. Regardless of enrichment, the food itself has to be whole and complete from the get-go, from the beginning, from its origin. So for the most part, convention produces and markets deficient food, refined, processed, dead food. Then they add a popular, trendy micronutrient or botanical phytochemical and then calls it a functional food. So it's very deceptive. But convention works primarily by clever deception. They focus on what they tell us. You know, this is the way it is, and then we respond because it's on TV, therefore it must be true. And this is all a distraction, like a magician. They distract you while they do the stuff that seems like magic. And in this case, with convention and food, functional food, it's mostly BS. So they disregard the facts and focus on the BS. And that's how they con the masses. Now, in truth, functional foods are acceptable as long as we keep a sharp eye out for quality, know our food chemistry, and understand what the impact of whatever food in question will have on our future health. This is my advice. Take nothing from convention for granted. On this edition of Clinical Review, my topic is 10 reasons doctors don't prescribe vitamins. Now, this is very interesting. Ever wonder why most physicians don't prescribe herbs, antioxidants, or homeopathic remedies as a primary defense and treatment against disease? In this discussion, I will attempt to provide a rational explanation. Dr. Matthias Rath, MD, is a leading expert in cardiovascular disease and nutrition. He is the director of cardiovascular research at the Linus Pauling Institute of Science and Medicine in Palo Alto, California, and he's the author of Eradicating Heart Disease, a book that I would recommend to any heart patient, anyone with heart disease, or for that matter, any person with a heart, because any person with a heart has the potential to develop heart disease. So we need to know a strategy to protect us from such development. Now, Rath believes that heart attacks and strokes are not diseases, but rather symptoms caused by vitamin deficiencies. And I agree. You know, it's all based on research and investigation. And this guy is a real smart cookie, and he's right off the wall when it comes to how the other game players play their game of convention. He's non-conventional. He's out of the box. And he's my kind of guy. Now, he states that vitamin C deficiency is the primary cause of cardiovascular disease, and then proves his case with the following evidence. In simple terms, vitamin deficiency leads to weakness of the blood vessel walls, causing the deposition of the repair molecule lipoprotein A. This eventually builds up over time into atherosclerotic plaques and deposits, which decreases blood flow to the heart muscle. Rath prescribes many nutrients for heart and artery disease, including lysine, proline, carnitine, vitamin E, CoQ10, magnesium, niacin, B-complex, and several trace elements. So why don't the majority of allopathic physicians take part in proclaiming the good news about the benefits of vitamin C and other nutrients? There are many reasons, and here are 10. Number one, North American physicians lack financial incentive to prevent disease, as they are rewarded by governments and insurance companies for treating disease based on the name of the condition and a specific allotment of time, similar, in fact, to how a licensed car mechanic estimates the cost of repairs in an automobile shop. This is the business of medicine. The more patients a doctor can process in 8 to 12 hours, the more they get paid. Less time spent per patient equates to greater patient volume. You do the math. It takes far less time to diagnose a disease based on symptoms alone than it does to identify the cause of the problem and recommend a constructive lifestyle approach based on the biological uniqueness and emotional state of each patient. Number two, physicians have little or no training in nutrition science and biological medicine. The logic here is as follows. How can someone teach you something about which they themselves know nothing or very little about? Don't expect an allopath to be an expert in botanical medicine and vitamin therapy, or you will be greatly disappointed. As Dr. Leo Roy, one of the first holistic physicians in Canada, said, "Doctors are down on things they are not up on." Number three, physicians have little or no support from the policymakers and enforcers from above. In fact, they are often discouraged from practicing any form of medicine perceived by medical boards as being non-scientific, unconventional, or a form of quackery. For fear of losing their medical license and being sued for malpractice after many years of specialized medical training, many physicians who would like to stretch themselves simply choose not to and conform to the rules of engagement. Medical standards, policies, and laws pertaining to the freedom of practicing alternative medicine by willing doctors have to change. In Canada, physicians are intimidated and even revoked by their own College of Physicians and Surgeons, otherwise known as COPS, for practicing alternative medicine. An eye-opening good book on this topic is The Medical Mafia, How to Get Out of It Alive and Take Back Our Health and Wealth by Dr. Guylene Lactone. At any one time, there are several physicians in Canada currently involved in litigation. Physicians who are being forced to expend time and huge sums of revenue to defend themselves merely for their involvement in chelation therapy, ozone therapy, environmental medicine, homeopathy, and even hydrotherapy. So from the COPS point of view, concern for the welfare of patients is irrelevant, which is unconscionable and amoral. Makes me sick. This is their position. Policy first, people. Health of the patient second. Number four, and this is a big one. Vitamins are not patentable. Pharmaceutical companies have little interest in spending the billions of dollars on natural health products research they currently spend on drug research. Compared to chemically synthesized drugs, and specifically those that contain substances foreign to their body, called xenobiotics with an X, vitamins offer limited prospects in terms of economic monopoly, commercial profit, and exploitation. Drug companies can't patent something found in nature, such as manganese or pantothenic acid, because they didn't make it. They have to alter it somehow to make it unique, and this change in chemical structure often increases the toxicity or side effects of the substance. Therefore, vitamin research receives scarce financial support, although this is beginning to change, thankfully, which means there are few clinical reports to publish in conventional medical journals. Medical textbooks provide an extremely limited amount of scientific data on the health benefits of vitamins, and very few universities teach nutritional medicine. So very few medical students learn about this important and crucial field. Limited knowledge means only a handful of doctors practice nutritional medicine, and so millions of people continue to die needlessly from cancer, diabetes, heart disease, stroke, and obesity. Number five, a typical allopathic physician has a much different view of disease etiology and pathology. This means the cause and process of disease. Compared to some of the complementary and alternative medical models, the conventional paradigm of what causes disease often provides a striking contrast, especially regarding the influence of nutrition and fitness. Allopathic medicine is dedicated to the destruction of the pathogen, microbe, or bacteria, with very expensive drugs and technology. Naturopathic medicine attempts to treat the whole person, the cause rather than the effect, and teaches how to prevent infection, chronic disease, and physical degeneration with natural remedies, whole foods, and fitness. Number six, Dr. Batman Helajay, MD, author of Your Body's Many Cries for Water, believes that doctors have wandered from their original tradition of free thinking and medical philosophy because they are forced to memorize pre-digested information in order to get through the curriculum in teaching hospitals. The burden of having to remember so much misinformation around conditions that are simply complications of chronic dehydration must be lifted. But how much money is there in the promotion of water? Doctors have a sense of pride within their medical community, so they tend to be very sensitive to the criticism and ridicule they may encounter from their own colleagues if and when they step out of the conventional circle of acceptable practice, regardless of whether it helps the patient or not. Number seven, physicians are taught that besides preventing classic diseases such as scurvy, beriberi, or rickets, or using iron to treat anemia, vitamins have very little additional value. Of course, many proponents of natural medicine consider this view to be extremely narrow and outdated. If physicians made the time to study nutrition science and actually prescribe dietary supplements to large numbers of patients, a great majority of doctors might be convinced by the evidence of outcome alone. But the risk of losing their practice or suffering reprimand for practicing unconventional medicine is not something many physicians are prepared to take. Number eight, unfortunately, medical circles tend to be ultra-conservative with much of their energy devoted to the study and treatment of disease instead of health. Medical schools are also organized into organ-specific departments, and the connection between each department often gets lost in the framework of isolation. Remember, the more specialized anyone becomes, the less they know about the whole. Number nine, the selection process of each medical student depends to a large degree on academic status and grades. The process isn't really based on individual ethics, morality, and motive, such as why the student is there in the first place. If it was, natural medicine would be leading the way without opposition. And the first rule of medicine, primum non nocere, which means translated from Latin, above all, do no harm, would seldom be ignored or compromised. Students get high grades when they simply repeat during testing procedures exactly what the teacher wants them to say. Students who question what they are being taught are often labeled as renegades or troublemakers and are seldom rewarded for challenging status quo. Conventional medical schools, therefore, are packed with students who are good at absorbing dogma, but not necessarily good at thinking and questioning because they have learned by climbing up the ladder of conventional education that following precepts handed to them by presumed authorities is the best approach. To succeed in the process of medical training, one must also be prepared to suffer, as medical school can be likened to a military boot camp. Students are ground to pulp intellectually, exposed to massive amounts of endless information, which they must memorize, but not necessarily comprehend, in order to pass exams. Typically, medical students live on cafeteria food and coffee, have no time for exercise, and are seldom well rested. So, if the training process itself does not respect the health and welfare of the student, and if the teachers themselves do not model optimum health in appearance, word, and deed, as they are byproducts of the same thinking and training, how then can students learn to respect the health and welfare of future patients? And finally, number 10. In North America, modern medicine has evolved into a disease management business instead of a true healthcare society that devotes more energy, time, and money into education and prevention of disease rather than treatment. It tends to compartmentalize the human body, create branches and divisions that specialize in only one organ or gland. And because much of their teaching is based on reductionism and genetic determinism, they tend to be extremely mechanical in their approach. Therefore, the trend for change and reform within our medical establishment continues to be painstakingly slow and extremely frustrating, especially for healthy, high-energy, athletic men and women looking for insight and advice on how to get stronger, run faster, improve immune response to strenuous exercise, stay well, and remain highly functional. The bottom line here, people, is do not rely on conventional physicians or conventional medicine for anything except emergency medical care. And of course, I must add that exceptions always apply. And there are some wonderful physicians out there in functional nutritional medicine that are on the same page as we would like them to be. Become your own doctor. Educate yourself in the science of fitness and nutrition and work as hard as an Olympic athlete in season to stay well. The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but will interest his patients in the care of the human frame, in diet, and in the cause and prevention of disease. Now, that's what Thomas Edison said. And here's another one for Paracelsus. The art of healing comes from nature and not from the physician. Therefore, the physician must start from nature with an open mind. Remember, life is a sport. Its objective is to succeed at staying well. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from physician and surgeon Dr. William James Mayo, one of the seven founders of the Mayo Clinic. The aim of medicine is to prevent disease and prolong life. The ideal of medicine is to eliminate the need of a physician.